This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
I wanted it so badly for my high school class song to be Big Pimpin' by Jay-Z. An opportunity that was denied to me by an overbearing, heavy-handed school principal who overturned a free and fair election of my classmates and I. We didn't even get a recount. We didn't even get a do-over. He just says, no, we're going to hand this over to the student council. And they picked Eve 6. Here's to the Night. She's a It's a bad song. It's a dumb song. Some other people have reported that their high school graduating classes did not have a class song. A text message says, hey, De La Salle did not have a class song. Coleman reports that his high school either didn't have a class song or he just doesn't remember what it was.
Yeah, I was so separate from like the activities. I was a loner in school, and I was so out of it that maybe they did have a song. I didn't participate in the voting. I didn't care. I wasn't like paying. I just wanted to get out. I just wanted to leave. So they may have played a song. I just don't remember what it was.
We'll never know. Unless you could text one of your...
I don't keep up with those people.
Class. It was kind of a long time ago. I don't really either. Hey, Cardosi, is he in there? Are you in there? Sometimes we catch him when he stepped out for a second.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. No, I'm spanking myself.
Oh, my God, Joe!
And I got to hit the dumb button.
Sorry. What tech
was,
on a day.
What was? Yeah, it really is. What was your class song?
Mine was Green Day's Good Riddance.
Booyah! That's what I'm talking about!
Oh, God, that song bores me to tears.
You zip it. You zip it right now, Joe. I don't have the patience for that nonsense on the show today. I'm getting hit about all kind of stuff.
I know Joe can't see you, but his cheeks are turning red. Look at him.
Hey, what?
Your face is turning red.
What's funny?
I mean, I know he's a fan. I'm just, just that song of all songs.
Here's a text that says, I would much rather have Big Pimpin' than my song, which was Green Day, Time of Your Life. Have I told you, Ian, I hate that I hate Green Day. Okay, all the Green Day haters are coming out of the woodwork today. Just get it all out, y'all. Just get it out of your systems, and we can all move on with our lives, okay? Joe?
They just make it so easy. I'm sorry.
What are you talking about they make it easy? By selling millions of records? By winning Grammys?
Yeah, here's every Green Day song.
Oh, my God. Joe?
But my teeth aren't bad enough.
Oh, that's a low blow. That is a low blow. That is a cheap shot, Joe.
Hey, that's the thing that keeps him punk.
It wasn't his fault. It was the meth, Joe. It was the meth that made his teeth like that. And he doesn't do the meth anymore.
I know. That's why he's not punk anymore.
Oh. Well, what do you think you wish he was still doing? Fine. Listen. Time of Your Life is a good song. It's fine. It's okay. It's not my favorite because it's been a little bit overplayed. It's been a little overexposed. There's other Green Day songs I like better. In fact, there's one coming up here in a minute. We're going to break with a cut off their new album. It's called Strange Days Are Here to Stay. That'll be the last thing you hear before we go back to Joe Cardosi again. Yeah. Yeah, listen to that, Joe. We'll see what you have to say about
Joe,
it.
Joe, you know what's funny?
Oh, no.
What is it?
So he didn't turn red. He turned purple and all that. And we're talking about, and they called me the colored person.
Oh, my God. Who calls you that?
I'm just saying, but you're changing more colors than I ever did in my life.
If anyone in this office is calling you that, you got a meeting with me in 45 minutes, and you better
okay,
bring your
right.
paperwork.
Hey, va voom, va voom.
Oh, boy. I'm really grinding my teeth in here. Here's a text that says, Kentwood, 1969. Our class song was, "We Gotta Get Out of This Place" by The Animals. We'll play that on the air tomorrow. The reason I'm asking about class songs is I just wanted people to tell me what their class songs were and tell me if they connected emotionally with it. Like, does this song represent what we were going through as a generation? Does it have a political message? Is it an anti-war song? Or is it something kind of fun and zany, like "We Gotta Get Out of This Place because we hate high school"? Or is it something else like "Don't You Forget About Me," like from the song at the end of The Breakfast Club, where Bender jumps up and he's pumping his fist in the air? Or would it be something like "I Will Remember You" by Sarah McLachlan? That's a banger. That's a banger right there. We'll play that on the show tomorrow just for you, Coleman. Man, you guys are really grinding my gears today. Good Riddance is on this list. Graduation, the Vitamin C song, we'll probably play that. That's an incredibly obnoxious tune, but it says it right there in the name, Graduation.
So what is the criteria of a graduation song? Is it supposed to be like a season finale song, like one of those songs that you play that kind of indicates the passing of the torch or you're transforming into a new...
I thought so. I mean, that's the ideal graduation song, in my view, is it's got a kind of message where like, oh, we're letting the past go. It's a new chapter. We're turning over a new leaf. It's a new era in our lives. That makes sense to me. But...
So how does Big Pimpin' play into that?
I don't know. We were 18. We weren't thinking about that stuff. We just wanted to troll our parents. We just wanted to hear them listen to Big Pimpin' when we were throwing our caps up in the air. Anyway, it didn't work. In an alternative universe, my high school class gets away with Big Pimpin' as our class song, but it wasn't meant to be. Thanks, Mr. Garland. Thanks for nothing. Class of 1980. Here's a text that says, Class of 1980, Sail On by the Commodores. That's cool. Commodores would be great. Another person says, Good Riddance was my class song in 2000. Another text says, Bon Jovi, Never Say Goodbye. I mean, some of these are pretty good. Somebody says, I Got a Feeling by the Black Eyed Peas. That's good. That could be a good graduation song. You know you're going to have a good time on graduation night. Man, maybe that's another thing we could talk about. What did you do the night that you graduated? We went to the beach, not the ocean beach, because there's no ocean anywhere near where I graduated high school, but there was like a little river. It was somebody's private property, but man, we'd go out there sometimes and, you know, drink Olympia beer, which I don't think they make anymore, but that was pretty tasty. Oh man, where did Charles go? I was going to talk to Charles.
I'm not sure.
Man, sometimes people call and they just hang on for like 10 seconds and then they're like, nah, I'm good.
I think after I graduated, I filled out job applications.
That night?
Well, I didn't graduate that night. I was doing a day. We had a daytime
Coleman,
graduation.
Coleman, I know you didn't graduate at night. So you graduated during the day, and then what did you do that night?
Like, as soon as
like
I left.
Like a big house party
right,
or something?
So I graduated at the Alaria Center on the West Bank, right? And I had my own car at the time. So, like, literally, like, right after I left the Alaria Center, once I threw my cap and stuff in the air, I left because I didn't want to socialize with anybody.
You didn't take photos?
No,
I
don't even
hands?
Have a class ring. Like, I didn't participate in nothing in high school.
Either.
I don't have, like, I just went to school and went home. I didn't want to associate it with anybody. Yeah. So as soon as I left the Alaria Center, I just went down to West Bank Expressway and stopped at, like, Burger King and Popeyes and just filled out applications.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. That's very, what's the word I'm looking for? That's very wholesome.
I thought you were about to say mature, but I said wholesome.
No, I said wholesome. That's nice. Yeah, like everybody, you got the house party. So many movies are about the big party that you have on graduation night. I'm thinking about like Superbad with Jonah Hill. Remember that?
Classic.
That holds up pretty well. I watched that not long ago, and it's still pretty good. Can't Hardly Wait. That's a little older, with Jennifer Love Hewitt.
I think I missed that one.
Seth Green, Lauren Ambrose. That one's still a little, some of the humor that we had in 1998. Like, it's just not that funny anymore. It's not like offensive, but it's just like, ooh, somehow that's not funny anymore. Here's a text message that says, I went home and went to sleep after graduation. I was exhausted. Text message here, 1996, my class song was Lean On Me, Cheesy. Oh, yeah. Okay, well, is it the Club Nouveau version?
The one that came from that movie with Morgan Freeman, that's the only one I'm familiar with. Lean on Me. Yeah, the movie's called Lean on Me.
Yeah, the whole movie is Lean on Me. Remember that scene where he finds them, they sing the school song, like in the barbershop quartet in the men's room? And he's like, where did you learn how to do that? That's a good movie. No, there was the Club Nouveau version, and then who did the, what's his face? What's the guy's name? Come on.
I'll do some Googles.
George Washington. Yep, that's it. George Washington was the person who originally sang Lean on Me. It was Bill Withers. There we go. Soothsayer Sam says, it was very industrious of Coleman to try to go to work immediately. Yeah. Well, if there's one thing we know about Coleman, it's that he's industrious. Yeah, Class of 88, Lean on Me, Club Nouveau. Ooh, somebody said American Pie is their class song. That's cool. That could go on for that's a long song. There's plenty of time to walk around and throw your caps. Here's a text that says, I graduated in May of 2020 during COVID. Brutal, man. I'm so sorry. That must have been hard. Really, really difficult. Text says, we had a parade graduation, and 20 of my friends went to Audubon after and took pictures masked up. No graduation song, though. Man, what a snapshot in time that must be to go back and look at your graduation photos, and everybody's got to be wearing a mask. That's tough stuff. All right, listen, we'll step away here, and we'll come back with more, not more of your text messages right away. We'll get to those towards the end of the show. But first, we got to talk to Dan Fox, who's the editor-in-chief of Anti-Gravity Magazine. They're celebrating their 20th year in publication, and I just wanted to kind of signal boost that and upload. I think it's a really cool publication. I really like a lot of what they'll do, so we'll talk to Dan Fox in just a minute. Shoot me a text about your class songs, 504-260-1870. That's the Oakland Art Jewelers Talking Text Line. Here's that new Green Day song I was talking about. Let her rip. Be right back. You better be. Here's a banger from 2003. Franz Ferdinand. Oh, man. Yeah. The early 2000s, man. That was a good time.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age. Wisdom, experience, and knowledge. Just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things, like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain. All symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. MIDI offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
Hey, joining me on the line right now is Dan Fox. Dan is the editor-in-chief of Anti-Gravity Magazine. Dan, welcome to the show. Nice to have you here today.
Thank you. It's an honor to be on WWL. I grew up with this radio station, so.
Oh, tell me about it. What do you remember? What were the shows you used to hear? Did you listen to the Saints or some of the talk shows or Rush or what was it?
It was a lot of weather. I think that was what was on when my dad and I, he would take me to school. So I would get the radio and I would get his commentary on top of that.
Cool.
Definitely a lot of Jim Henderson.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. I love those stories, man. It's great to have you here. I've been following your work for a long time. You're Gretna Dan on Twitter. I like your tweets. Do some good tweeting on there. Love Anti-Gravity Magazine, man. I really do. I'm so glad that we were able to pull this together. I know it's the 20th anniversary. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But just kind of color in for our listening audience, who are you, Dan? Where did you come from? How long you been with the magazine? How did you get involved here?
Sure. I've grown up in New Orleans the vast majority of my life. Grew up uptown, product of the New Orleans public schools, also product of the 1990s in New Orleans, which was just a lot of underground punk rock, hardcore, alternative, whatever you want to call that scene. Also a lot of hip hop. I was listening to the show beforehand. Y'all were talking about your sort of high school prom.
Your class remember, song. The song you played at graduation,
Yeah, I don't remember our graduation song, but I remember a lot of DJ Jubilee at our prom. So
cool.
That's the era I grew up in. So that's been a large part of my life. Now, Antigravity was formed in 2004, not by me. That's an important point. It was founded by Leo McGovern, but we were all part of that same New Orleans underground alternative, scene, encompassing a lot of subgenres, everything from hip hop and, punk and metal and stuff like that, so like raves. I think Leo was a big raver. And he started the magazine in 2004, and I was in the same social orbit as him. And so I was hanging out with Leo and his friends, and I was very much on board with what they were trying to do, basically just start kind of a new generation of cultural coverage in New Orleans, because as somebody who grew up here, I mean, I have a lot of love for those scenes, those subgenres. And it was just something that was never really covered in New Orleans, because New Orleans is just traditionally known for its institutional cultural contributions, like jazz and brass band, which is all amazing stuff. But that's well documented, and like I said, we were sort of coming up in that newer generation with newer music and newer culture. So Leo got that started. I was quick to jump on, and just through the years, we have continued that mission of just trying to document that part of the New Orleans cultural scene, because it's really important, and there's a lot of amazing things that come out of it and a lot of amazing people. And we just try to, we've been trying to showcase that.
Great. We're going to come back to that later. I do want to talk to you about, what you might say is the sort of health status of those sort of underground scenes today, as things are increasingly fast moving into the digital space, increasingly commodified and commercialized. I'd like to talk to you about those scenes and, how they compare and contrast 20 years ago. So if, for someone who's never picked up a copy of Antigravity magazine, if they see one on the rack and they pick it up and they open it, what are they going to see there? What should people expect from the magazine if they don't know anything about it?
They should expect just a lot of interesting content. It's a classic black and white rag. It's not a new format. It's a format that's been around in some ways as long as the printing press has been around. There is a lot of cultural coverage, a lot of interviews with artists. We do some political coverage that you're probably not going to see in other legacy media outlets in the city, but you're also going to see comics. You're going to see photographs. We have such a robust photography crew, and it's black and white newsprint, so it's a tough medium, but we definitely try to showcase a lot of photography. We have a horoscope column. We have a cleaning column. We have a column that's dedicated to raising children in Louisiana and New Orleans, and especially non-traditional family structures. So it's a lot of real talk is what I is how I would describe it. We have a tarot column. we do music and art reviews.
Yeah.
So it's really just your classic magazine format.
Great. Yeah. I described it earlier as an alt weekly, but it's monthly, right? I mean, you do it all. You're covering music events, arts and cultural events. You've got some, columns in there, poetry, photography. I love the cleaning column. I think the cleaning column is super. And just for people who kind of don't understand what we're talking about, it's literally just a column where a person whose job it is to clean other people's spaces and the kind of things that they encounter and tips that they might have and stuff. I don't know. It's just, it doesn't, it, you know, I don't, I think that's a really original idea, and I really enjoy reading that.
I really appreciate you saying that. Let me just shout out Isabel real quick, because she is like such a good, I think she comes from La Place, but she's, I say this in the, as a term of endearment, but she's like a total wing nut. Like if you read her column, it's very different from the traditional cleaning column. Like she's going to front load it with a lot of trivia that's specific to the month. And she's just also one of those people who kind of grew up in that Bywater scene. So like she's just one of our like beloved sort of weirdo contributor class.
Oh, man.
And again, I say that with nothing but love and, you know, affection for that.
I got it. Yeah. I love a good punk. I love a good weirdo. I love a good Bywater bohemian. Okay, so let's talk about the biggest challenges that you face publishing Anti-Gravity magazine. A lot of print-only publications have folded, some really famous ones, you know, the Village Voice in New York, papers and magazines like that. What are the challenges that you face publishing Anti-Gravity, and how do you overcome them?
Well, I mean, the challenges are, in a lot of ways, they're similar to any small business in the city. We are advertiser-based. So it is challenging to sell print advertising in this day and age, especially when a lot of businesses are struggling. So, you know, they're looking at their budgets. And so we have to sell this somewhat antiquated format to them, which, you know, we try to do by being a very interesting publication and something that we hope people will pick up. The way we're overcoming that, I mean, frankly, is we're just too small to fail. You know, we are a core of dedicated people. We all have day jobs. I have a day job. So in terms of our overhead, we're really lean and mean. We don't have an office space that we have to pay for. We don't have a huge overhead. We don't have, like, shareholders or any one source of income. Like, our income is dispersed, you know, over dozens of advertisers. So that's how we survive, is basically just being extremely efficient with our resources, and also just being incredibly dedicated, passionate people who are doing this. You know, people are paid, our contributors are paid, but nobody's coming into work every day and, you know, depending on this publication to, you know, put a roof over their head or something like that. So that's one thing that's kept us alive.
I love your advertisements because they're very creative. You know, they're not just sort of boilerplate, like, you know, here's my restaurant or here's my boutique. You know, it's clear that some creative energy has gone into these. So it almost feels like content as opposed to just a straight up advertisement, which I know readers appreciate.
Sure. A lot of that is, I mean, it's important to me, that we be reader-based, that at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is put something out there that's interesting to our audience and our readers. So, that's the kind of advertiser we attract, is, you know, a lot of small businesses and a lot of people, you know, again, our beloved family of wingnuts who want their little space of the magazine.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about, you know, what you may call the proverbial skins on the wall. Like, is there a moment or an issue where you think the magazine had a greater than usual impact on the community or the paper's reputation? Like, what are your biggest successes? What are the biggest splashes that the magazine has had over the last two decades?
Well, I know one watershed moment we had. And this has to be like 13 years ago at this point, but we started having writers that were taking a look at things like food trucks and Airbnb and all of these kind of new style gig economy type, you know, economic factors. But we had very early Airbnb coverage that I think really put us on the map. That was an inflection point. I think that's when people started to take more notice of the magazine. And that, again, that had to be in like 2013 or 2012. I mean, now like Airbnb is a big topic in this city, but I'd like to think that Anti-Gravity was one of the first publications that really got in front of that. Our voting guide has been a phenomenon that I never expected. We can get into that, but and that started I think around 2014 or 2015, but that has become an event every time that happens, and that definitely has really gotten our profile up in the city.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. I was certainly planning to bring it up in the course of this conversation. The voter education guide that you guys do is so well researched. It literally kind of, my jaw kind of drops every time I open it up, because a lot of these candidates that are running for some of these, you know, down ballot races, if it's in the judicial system or Bessie or something like that, the constitutional amendments, these things are not easy to research for me. And I'm a person who considers myself to be a fairly skilled researcher in this regard. Like the way that you guys are able to go out and find information about some of these candidates and what they've said in the past, or what it's on their social media, or what their platform is, even if they don't have a website, they don't really have a fully functioning campaign. You know, some of these people are just like names on the ballot, but they're not actually out there doing events or interviews or anything like that. But your team is still able to go out and discover everything that's knowable about these people and put it together into this, you know, many, sometimes dozens of pages of very, very detailed information about all these different kinds of races. And it's a very impressive piece of work. I don't think anyone else in town is doing anything quite like that. How do you manage that? That must be a tremendous amount of work.
It is a tremendous amount of work. And again, our team is so dedicated. They are so passionate. They are so intelligent. I'm constantly in awe of them. And again, these are people who are just personally invested in their community. And I think what keeps us going is just the interest in it. I mean, if nobody cared, we probably wouldn't do it. But what's always amazing to me is it'll be a week before the start of early voting, and people are just kicking down the proverbial door asking us for this voter education guide, which always blows my mind. Like, you know, we used to publish it right on the eve of the actual election. And then, of course, COVID made, you know, early voting a thing. So now we really try to publish on the eve before early voting, and people are just clamoring for it. And that interest in it from our readership, from our audience, and like the greater, you know, city as a whole, like that is really inspiring to me and the crew that puts it together.
Yeah. Great. It's good stuff. So when should we expect
it's just totally organic, I have to say, if I make this point, because, and I wrote about this, I think, maybe several issues back, but, you know, I started publishing the voting guide. It was another organization that did it, and I would just put it in the magazine because I would be, you know, on the eve of an election, I would want to vote, and I would want to vote on these down ballot candidates and these down ballot items and propositions, and the coverage of them in legacy media was so lacking. And I found these people who had a blog who were doing this work. And so I would read it and I put it in the magazine, and it turns out that, you know, hunger for that information, was just really widespread throughout the community. So that has really taken off. I mean, that was not by design how that has worked out, but, it has worked out. So it's always just really special to watch every election, the interest and the enthusiasm that it brings out in people.
I am sure it is. Yeah, you gotta birth that baby. So when should we expect the voter education guide for this upcoming November election?
Right. So the team's working really hard on it. I know that early voting starts on a Friday in October. I don't have a calendar in front of me, but whatever that day is, whatever that Friday is, you should expect that voter guide to be live on our website.
Kick ass. Great. Now, Dan, let's pause here. I'm going to step away and just take care of some business. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about underground scenes in New Orleans, and then also the future of the magazine and maybe the next 20 years. My guest is Dan Fox. He's the editor-in-chief of Anti-Gravity Magazine. I'm Ian Hoken for Scoot. Stick around. Okay, it's 3:46. Got about 14 minutes of program left here on The Scoot Show with your guest host, me, Ian Hoke. Let's see. Dan Fox is still on the line. Dan is the editor of Anti-Gravity Magazine. Dan, thanks for sticking around. I did want to talk about, you know, you said when you and Leo really founded the magazine 20 years ago to sort of highlight what was happening in the underground punk scenes, rock and roll, the underground hip hop scene, what people are doing, you know, at the sort of ground floor in terms of artistic work, photography, things like that. And I know this is a pretty overly broad question, but, you know, give it a shot, I guess. What do you view as being the sort of health of those scenes today? And I know we're talking about a lot of different sort of disparate scenes and communities, but it's sure. Just it's hard for me to look around, you know, as an adult, I guess, and and think that, man, the scene is as vibrant now as it was 10 or 20 or 30 years ago. And the next generation of artists that are representing New Orleans in a way that nobody else can, and they're going to make the kind of music and artwork that nobody else in America can make. They're out there, man, and they're doing the work. And sometimes in my sort of bluer moments, I think that that's not happening. And then it's not only not happening in New Orleans, it's not happening in New York or Los Angeles or Miami or San Francisco or Athens, Georgia or Seattle or any of the other places that used to have these really specific sounds and sets of values and the way that people thought about themselves and their art and their place in the world. Is all that gone away now in the age of the internet and people just getting so obsessed with other things? Where are we at with all that in New Orleans specifically?
Yeah, that's a big question. I guess you're speaking to sort of the demise of regionalism.
Yes,
in terms of like
exactly
what, like a yeah. I don't know. It's hard to make grand sweeping generalizations about a scene. I mean, to one of your points. I mean, I think the New Orleans scene, for lack of a better word, is incredibly healthy right now. I mean,
good.
I think what's good. Great about what you see today is you see a lot of bands on tour. These are things that used to be incredibly difficult to pull off, and that's something I've observed now, being decades deep into this, you know, cultural environment here in the city. I mean, a lot of bands did not tour when I was growing up. They didn't tour. They didn't really put out records. I mean, it's incredibly easy now to be a band and have your own infrastructure where you go on Bandcamp and, you know, it's really easy to get the message out. It's fairly easy to play shows. It's a big question, so I might jump around a little bit. I mean, one area that New Orleans could use some work is more all ages spaces.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, there were all ages spaces where I could go and watch a lot of these shows. I don't know how many of those are around currently. They sort of come and go. We could always use more of that, like more inclusion, less traditional bar venue types, even though yeah. those are great and beloved. Mm-hmm. It's hard to know. Especially, I mean, New Orleans is a special case too, because we've had such an influx of people post-Katrina. But at the same time, I will say that New Orleans is holding on somewhat because a lot of people here are still in the scene. They've been in the scene. Shout out Quintron, who I believe is listening. He's an avid
nice.
Radio fan. Hey, I mean, he's as busy as ever, which is just really inspiring to see. Yeah. So, you know, he's holding it down. We've lost a few people, but like, you know, the band I Hate God, they're as busy as ever. I don't know how much we can talk about them, but they're kind of a huge cultural force.
Sure.
That, like, I've written about them. They're as influential as the Meters. I mean, they have global reach and yeah. influence.
Wow.
And they are very New Orleans. They are very much a product of New Orleans. There's a lot of, I mean, I see what you're saying, and I do believe that the internet kind of is atomizing culture a little bit, but yeah. at the same time, you know, New Orleans is what it is, and the internet can only change that so much.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's good. You've given me some hope, Dan. I think that part of my own perspective on this is the fact that I largely came up in the theater and comedy communities here. And I don't, I hope I'm not speaking out of turn, or certainly not on behalf of everybody that did comedy or everybody that did theater. But both of those seem to be in pretty rough waters. You know, just the amount of talent, the amount of venues, the amount of money that just evaporated in the years between, you know, 2018 and the present day. And COVID had, a lot to do with that. And it's hard to look around and say that those are healthy scenes in the same way that they were 10 or 15 years ago when, you know, it must be said, you, like you mentioned, you had this huge influx of young creative types after Katrina who came here to kind of make their mark and then did. And then 5 or 10 years later, they've all, you know, gone on to have families or gone to grad school or moved somewhere else where there's more money and more opportunities. And nothing is filling that gap in those communities in particular. So I think, yeah, part of my own fear about this is just my own backyard and the places that I kind of grew up in just kind of aren't the same anymore. And I'm just sad about that. But I'm glad to hear the all the communities that you mentioned are doing well. All right, we're kind of drawn down to the end here, Dan. We're out of time. But I did want to make sure you get plenty of time to tell people how they can find the magazine, where they can go pick up a copy, if they want it delivered to them, if they want to, you know, support you financially with a subscription, how can they do that? And also, how can they find your work online?
Yeah, antigravitymagazine.com is a great place to start. That's all one word, all one thing, no dashes, no underscore, none of that, just antigravitymagazine.com. We have well over 100 distribution spots in the greater New Orleans area. Those are all listed individually on our website, as are links to our merch. We have a big cartel site that we do offer a merch subscription. So whether you're here in town or anywhere in, you know, where the mail delivers, we will get an issue to you. But I just say look for it around town. You know, coffee shops, bars. We do a lot at the New Orleans Food Co-op. We probably go through like 400 issues there.
Nice. That's
in
great.
The Bywater. Yeah. But yeah, we're around and we're, you know, we can always, we just actually increased our distribution another 1,000 copies.
Wow.
So we're out there. Yeah.
We out here. Man, Dan, thank you so much. What a nice, refreshing conversation this was. A good break from more contentious things. Really nice speaking with you. Dan is the editor-in-chief of Anti-Gravity Magazine. Thank you for your time. You're working your way, brother. I can't wait to get my next issue.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. There he goes, Dan Fox. We'll be back to say goodbye. Let's get a look at traffic with Joe Cardosi. I'll try and read just a few more text messages here before we step away. And I'll tell you what I got coming up on the show tomorrow. I think you're really going to like this. I'm Ian Hoken for Scoot. Be right. Before we step away, I got to thank Coleman, Scoot, Dan, Diane, Chris, and Joe. You just keep doing your thing, Joe. On the show tomorrow, we're going to talk in the first hour a little bit about what it's like to be pregnant in Louisiana right now. We're not going to high dive on the issue of abortion, but we are going to talk about how abortion restrictions have made it a little bit more difficult to have a healthy pregnancy, which I don't think is the intended outcome here, right? So we'll talk to somebody from Lyft Louisiana about that. I'm also hoping to find someone from the city council who will talk to me about their big plans for Canal Street. I'm sure many of you will remember the kind of heyday of Canal Street when it was all, you know, the center of the universe with all the department stores and all the little boutiques and everybody wanted to go to Canal Street to see and be seen. Hasn't been that way for a little while, but maybe it could be again. So we'll talk about that tomorrow. And of course, I want to thank everybody who texted in and called in today. And those of you who texted in about your high school class song. I got so many class songs. We're going to stack up the entire show tomorrow with bumper music that was your class song. I can't wait to share that with you. I'm Ian Hoken for Scoot. He'll be back Thursday. I want to thank you again for being a part of the show. Here comes the news. Enjoy Sports Talk. See you later.